Thanks for downloading this podcast from RNIB Connect Radio. On RNIB Connect Radio.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and it's the Happy Hour with Claire and Paulina, a show where we discuss well-being, mental health, and all things in between. So once again, a packed show. Paulina, what's coming up?
Well, we're going to be chatting about the International Blind Sport Federation World Games. They're coming to Birmingham in August. We'll also take a look at the shelves of the RNIB library for some self-help titles. And we'll hear how a global network of established recording artists and music professionals with disabilities is helping to connect and empower disabled people working in music. Plus, I have something special for you this week, Claire. I'll be bringing you an funny or slightly interesting news story, and I did a bit of a theme. I connected it to books this week.
I am on my edge of the seat with anticipation for this one. Brilliant. But first, more music with Eddie Cochrane, and we're looking at those self-help books after.
Summer is here, so as we all get a bit of a health kick, a good place to find some motivation is in the RNIB library. So today I'm going to have a look at some self-help titles that could support your mental health, teach you the art of breathing, and finally solve those low energy days. But first up, we're going to start with Why Has Nobody Told Me This Before? Drawing on years of experience as a clinical psychologist, online sensation Dr. Julie Smith shares all the skills you need to get through life's ups and downs. Filled with secrets from a therapist's toolkit, this is a must-have handbook for optimizing your mental health. It's written in short, bite-sized entries, and you can turn straight to the section you need to depending on the challenge you're facing, and immediately find the correct tools to help.
Imagine taking the best football team in the world and putting them on the pitch without any defence players on their side. Suddenly, opponents that never previously posed a threat would stand a much better chance at winning. While the defence players may not be as exciting as the strikers, we all underestimate their power to change the game. We all have the tendency to neglect the basics. Your mother tells you to get to bed early and eat your greens, and you can't help but roll your eyes. Thanks, Mum. But when it comes to defence players, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. The basics are the first thing we let slide when we're not feeling so good. We withdraw from friends, we drink too much coffee, then we can't sleep, we stop exercising. But what difference does it really make? Well, the science suggests that it's a bit like taking each of your defence players off the pitch and leaving an open goal.
An extract there from Why Has Nobody Told Me This Before by Dr. Julie Smith, and of course read by the author herself. This talking book is 7 hours and 14 minutes and is full of advice from managing anxiety, dealing with criticism or battling low mood, to building self-confidence, finding motivation, or learning to forgive yourself. Now, we can't talk about well-being without focusing on the most basic of things. In breath, The New Science of Lost Art, journalist James Nestor draws on thousands of years of medical texts and recent cutting-edge studies in psychology, biochemistry, and human psychology, and turns the conventional wisdom of what we thought we knew about our most basic biological function on its head. Traveling the world, Nestor finds answers not in clinical labs, as we might have expected, but in the muddy digs of ancient burial sites, secret Soviet facilities, New Jersey choir schools, and the smoggy streets of Sao Paulo, Brazil. After reading this book, you will never breathe the same again.
It's evening on the second day of the Stanford mouth-breathing experiment, and I'm in bed with silicone plugs jammed inside of my nostrils, covered with tape. For the past few nights, I've been splayed out in a part of my house usually reserved for relatives or friends. But I had a feeling that my mouth-breathing lifestyle might be a challenge for my wife. Lying here, tossing and turning, thinking about cavemen and unable to sleep, I'm happy I moved. I've got a pulse oximeter device about the size of a matchbook strapped to my wrist and a glowing red wire around my middle finger. Every few seconds, the device records my heart rate and blood oxygen levels and uses this information to assess how often and how severely my tongue might get lodged in my too small mouth and cause me to hold my breath, a condition more commonly known as sleep apnea. To gauge the severity of my snoring and apnea, I've downloaded a phone app that records a constant stream of audio throughout the night, then provides a minute-to-minute graph of my breathing health every morning. A security camera just above the bed monitors every movement.
Breathe, The New Science of Lost Art is read by author James Nestor and lasts 7 hours and 20 minutes. And for our final recommendation today, we have a new release from this year, Karina Antram's Fix Your Fatigue, 5 Steps to Regaining Your Energy. This one is for those that constantly feel tired, struggle to feel energized throughout the day, and wish they could be more productive. Registered nutritionist and coach Karina Antram offers 5 simple and achievable steps to reinvigorate your energy levels for good.
If you were around in the 1980s, then you'll remember that CFS, then known as ME, had the nickname Yuppie Flu. The implication was clear. Lazy young professionals were growing tired of working hard and as a result developed a psychological illness that mysteriously made them feel constantly tired. Most of the press at the time insinuated that it was very much all in the mind, and anyone with ME was seen to be weak and unable to cope with life. Since then, despite much research into CFS that shows specific changes in immunity with clear diagnostic markers, there is still a perception that long-term fatigue is partly in the mind. So is this true? It might surprise you to know that my answer is no and yes.
With 5 simple steps, Karina Antram's Fix Your Fatigue, 5 Steps to Regaining Your Energy could help you find out what's going wrong with your energy supplies and how to solve it for good. The talking book is 4 hours and 44 minutes long, and it's read by Karina Antram herself. Now, that is our final recommendation. You can find all 3 titles mentioned today by registering for a free account with RNIB's Reading Services. All you have to do is visit readingservices.rnib.org.uk. Happy reading!
You're not the one for me. Big black holes and a cherry tree. Can't quite get that cause my heart forsaken me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ooh. Big blue house and a cherry tree. Ooh. I can't quite get that cause my heart forsaken me.
Katie Tunstall on RNIB Connect Radio. Now, on the Happy Hour, we're going to learn a bit about the World Games coming to Birmingham later this summer. Our Alan has more.
The countdown is well and truly on to the IBSA World Games coming to Birmingham in August. There'll be blind and partially sighted athletes from around the globe coming to compete, and there's even some qualifiers for the Paralympics as well. Now, we have with us, first of all, Elena McGregor, who's the Chief Executive of British Blind Sport. Elena, you guys have been, well, pivotal in bringing the IBSA Games to the UK. It's taken a while to get here, but not long to go now.
Yeah, scary, daunting, overwhelming and exciting times. 10 sports in total participating, but there will be stuff going on. We're hoping to have an exhibitions area. We're also having an activation zone so people can try sports. We are also working with a huge amount of volunteers. That's happening over the next couple of months to train people on how to guide people so that people can come who are blind and partially sighted to actually enjoy watching the sports as well. Some of which will be audio described. There's a lot going on. The opening ceremony, we've got musicians from different parts of the country, most of whom, or if not all of whom, are blind and partially sighted, as well as a dance group. So there's a real cultural, inclusive element to it all, and we're very excited about it.
You know, Birmingham, the Commonwealth Games last year, which was massive for the city as well. So, you know, you guys, I imagine, will be benefiting a bit from that experience, but, you know, adding that accessibility part and that inclusion even more.
I mean, this is a huge event for blind sport in the UK, but also it's pivotal in terms of the impact that it has, the social impact and the legacy for the city. So we're doing a lot of work in the background about what happens next post that. So we're looking at, you know, like the legacy from the Commonwealth Games, about the attitude towards sport, what services there are in sport post Commonwealth. And obviously we're not on anywhere near that size, but what can we do that can have a similar impact and legacy for blind and partially sighted people?
How many athletes and their entourage are you expecting? I mean, it's not the size of the Commonwealth Games, but you know, this is a substantial Games. It's an important event as well.
At the moment, we've got a very high number. We anticipated something like 14 to 1500 athletes and possibly 400 support staff. And that doesn't include the volunteers that we're recruiting. But in reality, we're well over the 2000 at the moment. There's 2300, I think. Now, that brings with it a number of challenges. One, that's great, obviously. But in terms of accommodation, in terms of feeding this many people, in terms of the additional pressures that puts on transport and volunteering, we're trying to get that balanced. And actually, on that note, there's a second stage of registration. So there might be a little bit of dropout, but we've certainly exceeded the number that we thought we were going to start with. And also, as a result of that and getting the venue right, we're actually moving goal ball to Coventry, and that's going to be happening at a stadium there. And the goal ball consortium of all the countries will now be based at Warwick University. So it really is a Midlands approach rather than just a Birmingham approach, which is really exciting for us.
Now, there are countries from around the globe attending, and joining us, we also have with us Matt Clayton. Matt, you're in Australia. I hope we haven't kept you up too late.
It's okay, Alan. It's not too bad here. We're super excited over here. We've got our largest contingent coming over that we've ever had. So at this stage, we're anticipating having a contingent of around 100 people coming from Australia, which is amazing for us. And there's a real buzz across our blind sporting community here in Australia. So as you'd imagine, the trip from Australia to the UK is pretty big and pretty expensive for a lot of people. So yeah, we potentially have had around 150 people coming over.
As chef de mission then, how... or what is the pressure like for you then? How do you select the sports or select the people that are going to be coming across to the Games?
It's certainly been a challenge. And for us, we've worked closely with a number of different sports, particularly those sports who run the activities themselves. So we've worked really closely with Tennis Australia, Blind Cricket Australia and Cricket Australia around the selection of their teams, and then to see how we can support them. Then with a traditional IBSA sports such as goal ball and judo, we've worked closely with the national organisations here to make sure there's a really stringent process in place to be able to look at how people qualify, particularly given those sports will be potential Paralympic qualifiers. So it's been tightly contested. Unfortunately, we've had a few people who've missed out along that journey, but they've certainly expressed their eagerness to go again in 4 years because they see how big this will be for the sport here.
Yeah, you mentioned the Paralympic stuff there as well, things like goal ball and judo and so on. You know, the guys are going to be competing for the Paralympic Games. So you get some elite athletes here. And Elena talked about a legacy and spreading the word about sport or leisure activities being more accessible. Is that a similar thing in Australia? Do you look to kind of improve access? Do you look to get more people involved, you know, even if they can't make the elite side of things? You know, there's still that participation and the benefits of sport that can come from it.
Absolutely. And I think the reason we've invested a lot of time and energy into these games, and even putting myself in place as a chef de mission, we see this as an opportunity to really showcase all the different sports and opportunities that are out there, both from a participation perspective, but then also where some of those pathways may be, even if they're not Paralympic pathways, for people to get involved. So for us, it's very much a bit of a watershed moment to see, well, where are those opportunities for people to pursue the sports that they love, particularly given there are some sports who'll be at these games for the first time. So sports for us, like blind cricket and blind and low vision tennis, are really quite big sports here. Blind and low vision tennis is by far the fastest growing sport we have in Australia. And so to have that involved in the games is amazingly exciting, and that has driven baseline participation then all the way up. And the fact that we have so many people who want to come to these games just showcases how the growth of blind sports in general has been seen over here and how people are taking part.
Elena, I suppose you see the similarities around the world then. You know, Matt talking there about, you know, the drive to get more blind and partially sighted people into sport, you know, spreading the word amongst, you know, the sighted community as well, trying to get them involved too. So a lot of commonalities there. So does it give you the chance as part of British Blind Sport to get together with people like Matt when they come over and kind of brainstorm and discuss what's working, what's not working, new ideas?
Yeah, absolutely, Alan. And it's interesting what Matt just said about tennis being the fastest growing, because that's been emulated in the UK for a number of years now. And you also mentioned cricket as a very popular sport. So a lot of the countries have got some really strong similarities, and we can then sit together and discuss and talk about best practice, what's acting as barriers for sports. Sometimes that could be the rules, sometimes it could be the equipment, sometimes, like Matt's mentioned, the funding, and then see how we can support one another. And similarly, we can look to where there's massive gaps in our sectors as well. You know, there's areas where we can want to grow. We don't want people to have just a choice of, say, four or five sports. We want them to have a choice of every sport within reason of keeping themselves safe. So Matt and I, we talk a lot. We've shared best practice before, and I similarly have relationships with a colleague in Kenya and also in America. But to bring us all together, and I believe, Matt, I think of the 70 countries of IBSA, I think 67 of them have now signed up. So it's a really massive contingency. It's about the likes of Matt and I not only supporting our teams, but standing back and actually saying, right, what can we do better and what can we learn from each other?
100%.
We are absolutely looking forward to the games. RNIB Connect Radio will be broadcasting live shows. We'll be at the events, recording interviews and so on as well. So we are incredibly excited by this as well. Looking forward to bringing the games to our audience and beyond as well. Matt, just finally, if people would like to find out more about the games, what's the best way to find out?
Certainly, for the way we go about it, is we look at the IBSA Games 2023.co.uk website. That's given us a lot of information that we can share. So no doubt, as we get closer to the games, that website will be able to provide all the information and links for people to find out what's going on.
And Elena, is that the same if people look for tickets as well? Just really keep an eye on that website.
Yeah, that's the website to get all the information from. But as you know, you can always give British Blind Sport a call or go to our website, which is britishblindsport.org.uk. And that phone number is 01926 424247.
Looking forward to the games, but for the moment, to Elena and to Matt, thanks to both of you for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you, Alan.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks, Alan. Now that sounds like it is going to be an amazing event, and I'm tempted to go to Birmingham this summer.
Honestly, I've never been, but I would totally consider it, because I think you're going to be seeing people from around 160 countries, Claire. 160. That's, what, almost all of them?
That is a lot. And I always find, like, sporting events, they it's almost like they motivate me to want to do sport. The thoughts there, whether I actually do it is a different thing.
And I imagine it's going to be really fun. You know, like when you have a big event happening in a city, like we've just had Eurovision. It looked absolutely mad down in Liverpool, but I think it must have been brilliant being there, even if you didn't go.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's one thing we can say about the UK is when we have an event, it's like a big community and we all come together to sort of support and celebrate. And it's just like a really phenomenal atmosphere, isn't it?
And just one big party. We love a party. We love a party here.
We love a party.
Especially if it's sunny.
Definitely.
Well, we still have a few things coming up on the show today. We'll be hearing from Lachi about a collaboration bringing together musicians with disabilities across the world and making a more inclusive music industry. And you know what? We'll also have Music Therapy Moment. And Claire, I have a funny news story for you as well.
I'm looking forward to that.
Well, that's coming up right after You Got the Look.
That was a great track there from Prince and Sheena Easton. Now, Paulina, hit us with your funny news story.
Well, I hope you find it funny. So I thought it was certainly interesting. Have you ever forgotten to return a book to the library?
Many times.
Have you ever had to pay a fine?
Well, my parents did many times.
Well, imagine if you have forgotten to return a book for almost 100 years. So one person in United States returned a book to the Californian library that was actually rented or taken out of the library in 1927.
Oh my goodness.
And fortunately to that person, the library doesn't do fines anymore. They cancelled them a few years ago. But if they did, he would owe them a whopping $1,700.
Wow. That is crazy.
Apparently, they're on the hunt for the person that returned the book because they just want to find out how they came into the possession of it. They don't want anything else. They're just curious. And it went viral on Instagram. So hopefully they'll hear back. Hopefully we'll find more.
Yeah, the powers of social media will find that person for them. Oh, well, that was a noble thing to return it, wasn't it?
It's really nice. I mean, at that point, do you even return it or do you just pretend it never happened?
If you're going to get a fine, you'd probably pretend it didn't happen.
There's
no fine, then you'd be, oh, yeah. But, I mean, there are some people who, you know, books are their everything. I know people who have books in coolers to keep them intact because they're so old and they love books, and you think to those kind of people that book would mean something to them, and for some of us it would just go in the charity box, wouldn't it? So wow, incredible.
Well, the book is apparently on display in a nice safe little box to preserve it because obviously it's quite old. And
yeah,
you know, if you ever plan a trip to California and are near the library, maybe it's worth checking it out.
Yeah. Oh, what a lovely story. I liked that.
Well, this is a reminder, if you have some books that need returning, you should probably get on it. You might not have to pay a fine if you're lucky.
Yeah. Double check the fine status on that one. Right, we're chatting Empowering Those in the Music Industry next.
It's the happy hour with Claire and Paulina. What is a RAMFT? And how is it helping making the music industry more inclusive? Our Amelia Hilton finds out.
Recording Artists and Music Professionals with Disabilities, or RAMFT, was officially founded in 2022 to address the lack of visibility, access and representation for disabled artists and professionals in the music industry. Since then, their global network has grown and they were even accessibility consultants for the 2023 Grammys. I'm joined now by multi-award-winning writer, performer and advocate Lachi, who is the founder and president of RAMFT. Hi Lachi, thank you so much for joining us. So this all sparked from a panel discussion you organised back in 2021. Can you tell us more about that panel?
I was an active member of the Recording Academy who put on the Grammys for a couple of years before that panel. And I started out in the advocacy arm. And folks kept going, who is this Lachi person? How is she so learned on the laws of music? And through that, I kind of rose through the ranks at the Recording Academy to end up becoming the co-chair at the advocacy committee within our New York chapter. And with that small little nugget of power, I began to advocate for disability. I was approached by other folks in the advocacy committee, namely Sharon Tapper, who was my co-chair. And she said, why don't you bring that up to Grammy staff? So we did. And it resulted in Grammy's leadership wanting to put on a national panel about disability or the lack thereof in the music industry. We got together, we had this amazing panel, and it was a really vibrant discussion. It was probably one of the most watched panels that year. After the panel was over, we talked about some of the things the music industry could do to help amplify disability culture, access, and inclusion in the music and performance industry. At the end of the conversation, Valaysia Butterfield Jones says, and we're going to take this upstairs, we're going to look at it, and we're going to comb through everything you've said, and we're going to come back to you as the Recording Academy with some next steps as to what we should do. And I thought to myself when she said that, like, what do you mean come back to us? Like, what? Who are you coming back to? A bunch of unassembled artists? So that sort of sparked my, we need to come together and make something. And so I said, you know what? Let's do this. Recording Artists and Music Professionals with Disabilities was born.
And what kind of range of professionals and artists are part of RAMPD?
Well, getting a bunch of artists and singers with disabilities visibility is amazing. It's very necessary. But you know what? True change is going to come from the folks on the inside, the folks who are picking the artists to be part of labels and publishing deals, the folks who are the agents, the folks who are writing the checks and making the decisions and telling some of these stories. And so we wanted to make sure that we include a wide range of disciplines within the full spectrum of the musical ecology. And so RAMPD is a global network, but when we talk about that blanket of what does recording artist actually entail, we're talking about singers, writers, composers, producers, engineers, any type of music creative. And when we talk about music professionals, agents, managers, sound techs, we're talking about folks that work at a desk. So anywhere from administrative to executive to intern, working at labels, publishing houses, working at different music industry firms, or adjacent. So folks who work in the performance industry. If you work at a festival publishing music for gaming or TV, folks don't really recognize how wide of a range someone can identify as a music professional or even as a music creator. And in RAMPD, we have in our global network, two membership levels. You can be a community member, which is open to anyone who wants to be a part of our community. Whether you have a disability or not, whether you are a music professional or not, you just want to be a part of the fun. You want to be kept up to date. However, in order to remain competitive and in order to have these top level clients that we're getting, we do have our professional membership made up of folks who have been vetted by their peers as professionals in the music industry. They also identify as having some form of disability. So that's sort of a blanket term to include folks who identify as D-deaf or hard of hearing, as neurodivergent, as having a rare disease, chronic illness, physical or sensory or mobile disability.
And thanks to your work, audio description and American Sign Language interpreters were at the ceremony, which is super exciting. What are you most proud of about that?
I love the word you used, exciting. We are able to achieve so much because folks are excited about what we're doing. We're working with so many other firms to really include programming that will allow for disability awareness, that will allow for disability justice and rights and inclusion, and especially visibility within different work cultures and within different sort of artist and talent acquisition. So we've worked with Netflix to be able to put together a composer and songwriter development program. We've worked with the National Independent Venue Association in the United States, and they're working with us on accessibility. We're not finger pointy. We're here to work with folks about inclusion and belonging. All of that, though, has been made possible from one of our biggest and most visible clients, the Grammys. The Recording Academy. After having some talks with Ryan Butler, who is VP of DEI, we were able to put together a great package deal of like, hey, we want to make sure that this, that, and the other thing is included. We worked with them to ensure that they had ASL, American Sign Language, in theater. We're still working on having some sort of pipe out or some sort of picture-in-picture for the in-theater American Sign Language. We worked with them to make sure they had audio description and captioning, and we wanted to make sure that we built on those for next year, which included red carpet ASL, red carpet ramps, along with staff consultation and training.
And what are your hopes for the next year? What does Ramped have planned?
To begin to infiltrate other award shows. Obviously, this is a very big way to get the message out. We at Ramped want to deal with major or massive scale visibility where we can so that we could get the message out to as many people as possible. And we've been finding that working with folks like the Grammys to showcase what can be done and bask in the social impact that it provides. My goodness, when you add accessibility, when you add disability inclusion, it lifts all boats and it lifts all tides. And it marks off so much of DEI because disability does not discriminate. You do have to be intentional and in making sure that you focus on intersectionality of disability. The UN Supported Zero Project awarded us for our innovative solution to breaking down barriers. The barrier of entry into the music industry, into getting your art out there as a music artist. We have an idea. We want to put together a thing called the Ramped Stamp, where we partner with venues to help them and educate them on more inclusive and belonging measures at their venues. And lastly, we're really excited because the Ford Foundation are supporting us through their arts grant. We hope to be able to open up a thing we're calling the MIX program, which is the Music Industry Accelerator Program, where we'll actually be able to help develop our professionals, whether they're talent creators or on sort of the more music industry worker tracked. We want to start getting our role models out there. Folks with disabilities also deserve to be role models, and kids today absolutely deserve to have us as role models.
And where can people learn more and get updates from Ramped?
We have a beautiful website, ramped.org. That is ramped.org. It looks amazing, but also we've worked on it with Accessible First Design, so it should be navigable for folks with screen readers. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter at ramped_up on Instagram and at rampedup on Twitter. We're also on Facebook, so you can join our group. You can just search RAMPD and the group will pop up. We really want to start getting up our numbers because we're only going to be as great as the folks who join our community. We want everyone to join. Whether you're not disabled and whether you're not a musician, join our community. And for anyone who is a music professional or music creative who wants to be a part of our professional community, we would love for you to join our website. You can navigate to creating a profile on our website. And within the profile, once you fill it out, you can click Go Pro so that we can really begin to implement some of these things and really show off our stuff, really get our visibility out there, really showcase to the music industry, hey, look at how amazing we are. This is who you'll be including.
Well, thank you so much, musician, president, and founder of Ramped, Larchi, for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Amelia. Now slowly nearing the end of today's show, but still have a bit of room for a good one. Here's Paradise.
My love. My love. My lover, 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 I'm in paradise whenever I'm with you. My mind.
My mind.
My mind, well, it's a paradise whenever I'm with you. Ride on.
Ride on.
And that's the end of today's Happy Hour. We've had a lovely time on the show with you today. Now, if you'd like us to cover anything in particular on the Happy Hour, or maybe you'd just like to share something that makes you happy, then please do get in touch. Our email is radio@rnib.org.uk.
And remember, you can find our full episodes of the show on rnib.org.uk. Just search for the Happy Hour and you'll find our page with all those lovely episodes. Now, we have a special music therapy moment today. Claire, we have a listener suggestion.
Ooh.
So we got a lovely message from Mr. Pierre Schliemann, who actually chose a song written and produced by his friend Luke Orlin. And I had a listen. It's a lovely song, Claire. I'm going to play it for you here now. What do you reckon? Sounds quite nice.
Go for it. I love this. This is going to be amazing.
So here's Sideways by Luke Orlin. I think it's a good choice.
Thank you so much. And don't forget to join us on the Happy Hour next week.
Bye.
Bye. You are listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour long show. If you've enjoyed the songs and would like to hear them in full, along with all the interviews, tips, and chat, just catch the full show on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on every Monday at 1 p.m., with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m., and Sunday at 10 a.m. But for now, thank you for listening to the Happy Hour podcast. And take the magic
ride. For more downloads like these, visit rnibconnectradio.org.uk/podcasts.